हरिः ॐ
सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव हरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, so just in that point, context is you thank everyone for coming, despite all obstacles. Yeah, that's what it was saying here, is that for like Nanda Baba and the residents of Vrindavan, because of their being transcendentally situated, then the difficulties of the material world didn't affect them. Okay, page 26. Śrīla Jīva Gosvāmī writes in his Prīti Sandarbha Anucheda 261, now other features of Sakya Rasa will be considered. About the Anubhavas are the Udbhavsvaras, external symptoms of ecstasy. Right? Because it's a feeling within the mind, but it will have a physical expression. Okay, so the physical expression is the udbhasvaras. Right? Amongst the suhrit, well-wishing friends, the udbhasvaras include attempts to bring limitless good fortune to Krishna, discussion of what is proper and improper, smiling conversations, and other like activities. Among the Shaka friends, the Udbhasvaras include activities of unwavering affection, activities like various playful games, singing, artistic skill, eating together, sitting down together, taking naps and other like pastimes, telling jokes, hearing descriptions of confidential pastimes, and other like activities are also included here. Right? So even within the Cowherd Boys, then you'll have different groups. Like that. Like within the Shakis, there's four different groups, and the Cowherd Boys, there's four different groups. Right? So then he's described two groups here. So, yeah. Śrīla Sukadeva Goswami continued, yogis may undergo severe austerities and penances for many births by practicing yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, none of which are easily performed. Yet in due course of time, when these yogis attain the perfection of controlling the mind, they will still be unable to taste even a particle of dust from the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What then can we describe about the great fortune of the inhabitants of Brajabhumi, Vrindavan, with whom the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally lived and who saw the Lord face to face? Okay. Yes. Śrīla Viśvanātha Cakravarti Thakura writes, what to speak of playing with Krishna, even establishing a relationship with Krishna, is very rare. What that is the intent of this verse. The yogis do not attain even one particle of dust of Krishna's feet. Para pamsuhu. It was mentioned earlier that Krishna is not easily attained. Swayam sthitaha, no sthita, being self-situated, indicates that seeing him does not depend even on sadhana. Right? Because he has nothing to gain. Right? So if we're on the material platform, it's all about what we'll gain, right? Because you perform fruitive activities, you want the result, and then therefore the enjoyment one will get from that. Or the control one will get from that. And then for liberation, for the jnana, then it will be again the control gained from that, the social status and all those things, and then the experience that they expect to get from it. Right? So it's they're performing an activity that they will get something for. But Krishna, being one everything, and being Atmarama, there's nothing to gain. Absolutely nothing. So there's nothing that a materialist can do. A karmi, jnani, yogi, no matter how qualified or how pious, that can do something that Krishna requires. Because he is yoga. He is the fruit of activities, their knowledge, their application, their result. He is the knowledge he is knowledge, he is liberation. So there's nothing to gain. There's nothing any materialist can offer him that he wants. Right? But for materialists, they want the whole world, so there's plenty to offer. Right? Yeah.
It's in 7. It says here that it does not depend upon the sadhana.
Yes, because it's not that the activity you've done that is Krishna requires that.
My question was, we do sadhana bhakti, and I remember I heard that sadhana will never turn into raga mukha, vaidhi will never turn into raga by this mechanistical process. Is that correct? I would think.
See, raga is just a matter of desire. So it's by just focusing on following the rules that itself will not produce rag. Mm-hmm. It's desire for rag that will catch Krishna's attention. But the point is if you're not expressing that desire for rag through vaidhi, you're not going to get it either. So it's not something separate, because if they say, through vaidhi you can't do it, so you have to do another set of activities. That's just more vaidhi. Because vaidhi means you have to do that. Rag means you want to do that.
So we are technical here.
It's funny. How we have the picture, yeah, and you put it into negative, yeah, and the colors reverse and everything? When dark goes light, like just when the light went off, we reversed like that in the thing. Wow. Okay.
So can we say that technically we are, from the very beginning, following Raga Mukha Sadhana Bhakti?
We're following Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, but it's in pursuance of Raga Sadhana Bhakti. But the point is you can't focus on the Raga because there's nothing to do to make it happen. See, we want to know, okay, if Vaidhi is not going to give it, do I have to do to get it? What's the technique? Do I have to, read books on the gopis? Do I have to, stay up all night chanting the gopis' names? Or do I have to stand on my head while, saying Radharani's name backwards? Or, what do I have to do to get to this? And it's not, none of that. It's simply a matter of desire. Prema comes because there's a desire for it. Right? Why do we see that the gopis, in their spiritual form, right, that they're on the platform of Swarup Siddhi, that they, when Krishna plays his flute, they don't go. Because the desire before that never came to that complete attachment. Because they were busy in their household life and things like that, and taking care of the kids and cooking meals and serving and making cow dung patties and all the standard stuff they do. But they were doing it because they were interested in that. Right? The gopis are already, the eternal associates, they do it because then no one notices. Right? So this whole point of that, the example of Raga Nuga Bhakti being that of the wife with the paramour, how she does her duty so perfectly, right? That is the standard lifestyle of the eternal associates of Radharani and Krishna's pastimes. Because they do their duty so nicely, no one ever thinks otherwise. But the gopis who couldn't go were doing their duty so nicely because the duties are nice. You're in the spiritual world. There's no modes of nature. Everything's of superior quality. It's made out of Satchit and Ananda. It's conscious. It's not going to be good. Right? So it's not you making cow dung patties, it's making a mess all over your hand. They're all conscious. So the quality of it is so unlimitedly better. They're distracted by that. But the point is prema is beyond that. So it's the same principle. Is yes, you perform the secondary duties, but it has to be, it's about pleasing Krishna as the primary. And if that focus is there, then it starts to work. Right? That's where you start, rag starts to develop. But if it's about Vaidhi just doing it because it's the rule and you're satisfied doing the rule nicely, then that's different from you're following the rule because you like doing that activity for Krishna. You understand? There's a difference. It's subtle, but there's a difference. Just like, let's say, we'll give the example, going to Mangalarti. So we're going to Mangalarti because it's the proper activity. It's one of the best activities you can do. Right? You know, that early morning and all that, and then being able to perform the activities at that time. Then that's the best. So being able to do that, yes, I'm steady in my devotional service. I'm steady at going Mangalarti. I feel good because of that mode of goodness, but it's also, you know, being done for Krishna, so it's pure goodness. But that thing, I'm regulated, I do things nicely, it's proper, and that will be the taste. But that is, yes, that is there, but that's the taste of Vaidhi. You perform Vaidhi, it's devotional service, of course it's going to be good. The rag means you're going to Mangalarti because you like Mangalarti. You like going first thing in the morning to see Krishna and to sing and dance for Krishna. So it's not that it's something different. It's not that you put on your gopi outfit and go in the corner and make all kinds of funny looks at Krishna. You know? Like that. You understand? So it's just that you like doing that. But 1,000% guaranteed, very few people will accept or digest that as the definition of rag. It's got to be something far out and unique and different. And no, it's just you like doing it. Like Mother Jashoda likes taking care of Krishna. The cowherd boys like going out and playing with Krishna. Right? Because they have rag, where rag anuga means following that rag. So it's not different. But we'll think, oh, so I got to play like a cowherd boy. No, that's the external. That's the secondary. Yeah, so like that, one has to be careful, is that we see everything as secondary. So it's not something else. It means following the rules, focusing on the rules, and being satisfied in the proper following of the rules, that will not get you wrong. But that you're trying to follow those rules to please Krishna. And it's Krishna as a person that you're trying to follow by this. And then the satisfaction coming from that, that will develop into love. So it's just a matter of the mentality. That's why it's International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It's not International Society for, you know, somehow or another convincing Westerners to do all this Indian stuff that they really don't want to do, but, you know, the Indian sadhus think it's so funny watching them try to do it and they get a kick out of it because it's really boring being a sadhu in India, so they have nothing better to do, so this is the newest thing that they came up with that they've been harassing Westerners, you know, for the last century. And can you imagine what do you call that when you take the name and put it into the letters?
Acronym.
You know that acronym? Oh my God, it would be, you know, ridiculous. It's like supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, you know, like that. You know, like, so it's consciousness. That's all you're shifting is the consciousness. That's all. You know. So that's what's happening. And if you shift the consciousness, which is the primary, the secondary follows. Just like if I'm cooking and I want to fry something, my intent is frying something, right? You know, they say shallow frying it. What follows? What pan do I use? Right? I'll use something flat that has lots of surface space, you know, or I'll use a wok. What if I want to boil something? Then what will I use? Yeah, deep pan. Right? I want to cut something, I'll use a knife. I want to grate something, I'll use a grater. You know, does that make sense? So in other words, the secondary follows the primary. But we're so used to the secondary being the whole thing. You know, yeah, using the pot, you know, how you say? You put the things in the pan, and with your wrist, you're flipping them without using the spoon, and isn't that cool? And like, that's Vaidhi. The point is that's just the easiest way to flip it without breaking it up, and it's quick. You don't have to get the spoon, you don't have to do that. And the time it gets to get the spoon and stir it around, get that thing, you've already flipped it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that rag is another category. That's why it's not happening because of Vaidhi. But the point is, as pointed out by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, is someone who's purpose is following in the footsteps of the Vrajabhasis. Even he's following Vaidhi for his whole time as a sadhaka within the material body. If he hasn't taken up Raganuga by the time he leaves his body, when he takes up his service in his spiritual body, in his siddha, in his sarup siddha, then at that point rag will start. But it still has to become perfected. You still have to get to Vastu City. So whether you're in Sarup City by the mind or physically there, it doesn't matter, it's still Sarup City. Until it gets to Vastu, it doesn't move, it doesn't go to Prema. Is that what it is? Yeah. So it has to be understood as that, what's the actual position. Otherwise it's made, you make too much out of it. You know, right? So that's the thing, is that that's why we have to take the flavor given by the acharyas. Because all the acharyas here, they'll mention stuff, but how is it mentioned? Okay, he's just saying, just as a matter of fact, that now other features of Sakyarasa will be considered, right? Because that is bringing out and what's going on here. So he's just putting it out. But he's not sitting around and, you know, licking his lips that, you know, okay, now we got something serious. Before that, the stories weren't happening. You know what I'm saying? Because rasa is rasa. They can appreciate anything. Does that make sense? Yeah, so those who have that.
So,
yeah.
So can you say that Vaidhi is all about the external activities in Bhakti Rasa Parakram?
Is Vaidhi about the external activities?
Raga is basically about the more insular activities in Parakram.
You can say yes. You could say yes. But it's not that there's not a mood of devotion in Vaidhi. It's not that it doesn't have, but it may be that devotion and that through the rules. But the point is in either case, both are using the rules. You know what I'm saying? It'd be just like the difference between someone who's a nice cook, but they use recipes, and someone else doesn't need recipes. Cooking is going to be the same. The technique's the same. It's still sadhana bhakti. Right? So it's not that Vaidhi's inferior. Vaidhi's is the technique that's used. But the attitude then is you're trying to move it towards rag. It's not something separate. That's why the Prabhupada would become very upset when devotees would try to create a kind of sadhana based on a separate sadhana based on rag, because that has nothing. Sahajiyas do that. That's what they do, because they don't have any rag. So they just do things that they think would, you know, make them feel like they're special.
You know? So is it a correct understanding that in the case of Vaidhi, the mood of devotion is there, but at a lower level, but that the rag is intense?
You can just say the rag means is that you're more clear, it's more specific, while Vaidhi means it's more generic. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
We also have to understand is that take the simple, direct understandings and leave it at that. You know what I'm saying? It's just like this. If I said, the couple's decided to have a child. Okay? Now, for married adults, do I need to say anything more? Right? What if people don't know about household life? That don't know. So what does that mean? Does that mean they're going to have sex? You know? Sex, right? They're going to have sex? You know? And so then they want you to say, yes, they're going to have sex. Oh, really? Is that, you understand? So that's the whole point, is that catch the simple explanations the acharyas give. That explanation, then you take that, because that's the generic. Because it either makes sense or it doesn't. Because just like you said, you know, how you say the 8-year-old comes across, you know, some girly magazine, then how do you explain that? Yeah, so that's the point. It's either the rog's understood or it's not. So the point is it's not that Vaidhi is inferior and rog is, because the point is we'll get to rog at some point anyway to get to, you know, in the process of bhava. So if it's somehow or another by Krishna's mercy, by the, you know, special piety of that living entity, it comes while they're in the Madhyama platform, then great. But if it doesn't, it'll come there. But this idea is, oh, unless it'll never happen, because you can't force it. Vaidhi, you can do it. It's said that, see, to elevate yourself from the neophyte to the Madhyam platform, you can make that effort to really focus and try to do that. But to get from the Madhyam to the Uttam, you can't. There's no way you can create that. You can only try to sincerely serve Krishna. Krishna will therefore make the arrangements when he's pleased. Does that make sense? So in the same way, from Vaidhi to Rag, there's nothing you can do. You know, it's just like we're saying, teenagers, puberty hits, you don't have to explain anything. But before that, you could go on for days trying to explain it, it wouldn't make any sense. You know what I'm saying? So that's why it's not a topic of discussion. It comes up in the discussion, so we do it, but it's not a separate discussion. You never hear that that they're dealing just on this raga nuga thing. Does that make sense? Because it's just that. It's a matter of consciousness. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So the consciousness invited, the consciousness raga, both have to be on Krishna. Yeah.
Is it still a little, you know, stick who has to be, I've heard many times, but do we mean by sadhana, like the constant practice of all the different areas? Let's say, like, you know, in Brahmacharya, sadhana means good alarm clock, good earplugs during chanting and being rough to the lady. But, you know, still, like, you know, what do you really mean by...
Means what's recommended by the 64 items of devotional service given by Rupa Goswami in the 6th chapter of Nectar Devotion, those being practiced, you know, focusing on one or a group or many or all, whatever is according to one's ability and the situation one's in. Right? That's sadhana bhakti. So the point is, rag simply means that there's going to be the shift in the consciousness, so that there's more of a focus on the generic mood of the devotees of a particular realm. But it's generic, it's not specific. If it gets specific, then it becomes sahaja. So that's the thing. So it's that culture. Because we can see it's from the 6th. Let's see, we have 20th is prema, right? 19th would be bhava. And I think 17th or 17th and 16th is talking about raga nuga. So that means 6 through 15. Those 9 chapters, that's all explaining Vaidhi. Right. Next to the book.
Would we say that a good sadhana for a preacher, for example, is regularly cultivating community and communication, or is it like it's just a private practice we speak when we speak about this?
It's both. It means it has an external form, but the external form without the internal doesn't have the same effect. See, its qualities are used, but the point is we are aware of the qualities, therefore then we're open to them developing. We can see that it would be proper to apply, let's say, humility like that. But it's not that we can separately cultivate humility, because according to karma, we're either humble or we're not. Does that make sense? But by devotional service, then through that sense, devotional service includes all the good qualities. Then by practicing devotional service, then humility will naturally develop. But that, how does it develop? Because we're trying to develop humility, or we're trying to see, I am servant of Krishna. So if I'm a servant of Krishna, what's to get proud about? Because if I'm servant of Krishna, now am I a direct servant or I'm an indirect servant, right? So I am the servant of my spiritual master, who's the servant of his spiritual master, back to Rupa Goswami, who then, you know, is then serving Lord Chaitanya. Right? So that means is that I'm doing this to please Krishna, so it's not about myself. And the service that's there is not mine, it's someone else's. So I do my best to try to do that service. So there's nothing really to get proud about. Because, you know, say, wow, I did great service. No, the service is somebody else's. And so I'm simply trying to help and take part in that. So in that way, humility is developed. But if I simply try to be, no, I got to be humble here, you know, kind of, like that, you know, yeah, tell everybody I'm an idiot. That'll make me humble, you know, like that. So, you know, it's like that. That's not the, you know, like in the meeting, then, how you say? So this would be the difference, right, between who's humble and who's proud. You're in a big meeting, so much discussion's going on, you want to make a point, no one's listening, right? You're not catching attention. So now here's going to be the difference. You take off your shoe, right? The guy who's proud beats it on the table to get attention. The guy who's humble, he beats his own head. Yes. Oh, yeah. No, that's practical. That's just doing your service. Shut up. Yeah. So there's no separate endeavor. That's the thing, is we're always looking for that separate thing, that trick, that technique, that. But there's only in secondary. But in primary, there's no technique. That's the whole thing. You know, affection, it's not a technique. You know, like that love for Krishna is not a technique. You know, so the you have that affection for Krishna, then you have the qualities used in that, and then the activities and forms that are used. So the gross, then the subtle, then the transcendental. Right? So that's what we're doing. So a lot of times we think, if I can cultivate the subtle, no, you don't have to separately cultivate. You cultivate what you should be doing in Krishna consciousness at that point. So at that point, you have to be humble, you have to be tolerant, you have to be respectful, you know, all these kinds of things. So it's part of the service. So if that's seen, then everybody does their duties nicely. Otherwise, then they come up with their own idea, you know, like you said before, you know, like that, you know, yeah. Lots of plastic bags, but not the. You shouldn't get those kind of newer, kind of biodegradable soft ones. You have to get those old, thick, crinkly ones that make lots of noise, and keep all your stuff in that. You have to turn on the light whenever you come in and go in the room. You know, you have to have the loudest alarm clock on that, and you always set it early with the idea that, you know, it'll prepare me to get up, but it just annoys everybody else and I don't get up. Right? You have to, you know, somehow or another stash halava like that. And like you said, yeah, you just don't deal nicely with the ladies. And, you know, then, yeah, basically, I think we covered everything. Right? Yeah. See, it's so easy being a brahmachari, right? Yeah.
Yeah. As a short practical question, what percentage of ISKCON devotees are infected with this particular premature artificial raganuga aspirate?
That I don't think you could put a percentage. Yeah, it's just that now and again it comes up, it goes away. Like that. So I wouldn't worry about that.
It's not that popular.
Yeah.
No, it's not. It comes and goes. Because it's I would say you'd have more problems with earrings and tattoos than you would with this stuff. Because who's going to notice the other stuff and who cares? Right? You know, so. If you want to get some mileage, then. Okay, where were we? Okay. So, these yogis, they undergo severe things that are really, really difficult, but because it's so difficult, still doesn't mean that they attract Krishna. Because we're thinking yoga, yeah, you sit down, you know, you do your little asana, and you know, you're 20 minutes and like this and that, you know. And so then, but the point is what we're talking about here is that yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, right? Because why do they only go up to here? Because most people don't get past that. Because pranayama means if you've perfected pranayama, you have actually are able to put the inward breath into the outward breath and you stop breathing. You know, like that. That's why, you know, you have these yogis, they can take them, put them in a box, bury it in the ground for 3 weeks, come back after 3 weeks, dig it up, pull the yogi out, and he's perfectly fine. Because he actually can stop the breath. Right? But he's sold out at that point, gets his fame just at that point. Now you have, pratyahara, pulling in the senses, dharana, focusing the mind on one point. Right? So it's going in more difficult. So, if we're thinking, oh yeah, I could control the mind, but that's after you stop the breath. Right? Then you can pull all the senses in, then you focus the mind, then you start meditating on Krishna. So that's why we see the devotional process, you just start thinking about Krishna. It's so much easier. Like that. So we're thinking, oh, this is so difficult. No, this is easy. Astanga yoga, that's tough. That's why they need 60,000 years to perfect it. Right? 10,000 on a good day, right? Good day of Brahma, right? Right? 10,000 years. But that the shortest you ever hear is 10,000 years. Right? Except for, you know, Dhruva Maharaj, you know. But it's 10,000 years. And for many, it's 50, 60,000 years. So that's why it takes so long. So it takes you thousands of years to get to move through these stages. So that's why I said just by chanting Hare Krishna, you get a benefit beyond this that these yogis cannot even get. Even they do this, it's so difficult, they cannot get even one particle of dust of Krishna's feet. They can't get. Why? Because if there's no devotion, you don't get. Now if they have devotion, like you see many of our, you know, the great devotees in Bhagavatam, that in the Satyayuga they would do meditation on the Supreme Lord and the Lord would come and interact with them. That's because they had devotion. It's not because of yoga they saw the Lord. It's because of devotion. Right? So many people are doing these big yajnas and you don't see the Lord coming, but someone does it with devotion, they come. Right? Isn't it Pitu Maharaj? He does that big and Vishnu comes and all that. Because of the devotion. So it's not because of the yajna. So it's not because of the yajna, the jnana, the this, it's because of the devotion. Right? Lord Shiva is in the Brahman. All these other living entities are in the Brahman. But why is it Shiva is considered, you know, so special to the Lord? Because he's a devotee. So being situated on that transcendental position, his position is unique because he's a devotee. That's why he moves around freely in the Brahman, while in Mahakalapura, while the impersonalists don't. They're stuck in that bright light and think that they've merged. Right? But you can still see their forms. They just can't see them. So, stop the breath, yes. That's the actual point. Because we're using the breath, you know, for all kinds of stuff. But if we use it just for talking Krishna to talk, then we've perfected pranayama. And then when everything you see it in relationship to Krishna, then that's pratyahara, right? And then everything you're doing is doing it just to, you know, then like this, it goes through. And so having come to that, then it has to get to the point where it's about pleasing Krishna, the person. That becomes then dhyana, and when that becomes intense, that becomes samadhi. And the perfection of samadhi is purva rag, where you have that complete attachment to Krishna. So all these other more technical things, they're hard, but they're much lower. That's why the devotional service does all these things. Yama, niyama, asanas, that you're situated nicely in devotional service. Right? They sit themselves on, you know, their, how you say, you put the kusa grass, and then you put the deer skin, and oh, if you put the deer skin, then the kusa grass, or however they like to do it. You know, the cloth, actually, it's kusa grass, deer skin, then cloth. Right? So like this, so that's there situated. But where is it? Not too high, not too low, right? You don't get yourself right on the edge of a cliff, and then you're doing your meditation. What if a wind comes along and blows you off the cliff? So that was too high, right? And if it's too low, it might rain and it might fill up with water. You know, you're doing your meditation and all that, stop the breath, and then next thing you know, you're under 10 feet of water. Not ideal. That's why not too high, not too low. Right? All these things are just there so that you can do that for a long time and not be distracted. So the devotee situates themselves in such a way, according to their position, how they can comfortably always be doing service on a regular basis to Krishna. That's asana. Right? Yama niyama, we do what we should for Krishna, give up what we shouldn't. Right? So like what you're saying is that the whole Ashtanga Yoga system's there in the chanting of the holy name. Just so we kind of think it's not, and we think yogis have a superior position, but actually not, because our how you say, their focus is on the, what is it, yoga rudha, it's the lower?
Yes.
So yoga rudha, is that's where everybody does nowadays, any yogis nowadays, they actually only take asana. Some devotees have said now in the yoga studios they don't do pranayama anymore. No one's into it. You know, you have to sit there and be peaceful, and who's got time for that, right? You know, so they just do asanas because they can see they'll get the physical benefit, the exercise, you know, lose those how you say, those, telling the people who always do yoga, they don't have to lose pounds, so lose those ounces, you know, keep those ounces off, you know, like that, you know. So the yama niyama they don't follow, you know, pranayama and on up. So it's, all they do is a little bit of asana. And even that, they're not trying to perfect an asana, because that means you can sit in one asana without moving for 2 hours, 45 minutes. So you don't hear that that is in any way a goal. It's all ounce related. Right? You know? Or what you can do with your, you know, what's left, how many ounces are left, what you can do with that afterwards. You know, you're fit, you're healthy, you're, you know, like that. So, but we look at that, oh, there's something more special. We're actually, it says, oh, they're yogis, you know, we're just, you know, Hare Krishnas. Yeah, we're just Hare Krishnas. That's the thing, it's the topmost of yogis. But if someone asks what you're doing, we're doing bhakti yoga. So, they know yoga, so what's bhakti yoga? I've heard of hatha yoga, or, you know, different raja yoga, kriya yoga, you know, how you say, all kinds of yoga, but, you know, what's it, Bikram yoga, isn't that the one where they sit in the sauna? And that must have started in Finland, right? Like that, you know. So you thought he was bored sitting there, so he started doing yoga, and they're, wow, what's that? That's cool, you know. So then, they've heard of these, but then bhakti yoga. So that's, you just have to say, we're bhakti yogis, and then explain it from there. So it says, like, what was it? One devotee was this morning was asking, you know, how do you present it? How do you? It's yoga, but it's bhakti yoga. Okay. Those who are so yoga inclined, Westerners or monotheistic. You know, so these different kinds of, you know, terms you can use. Is that okay? Yeah. Good. Okay. Verses 13 to 40, the story of the Agasura demon. Sukadev Goswami continued, "My dear King Parikit, thereafter there appeared a great demon named Agasura, whose death was being awaited even by the demigods." Right? So they were all hoping, when's this guy going to die? Right? He was a bad demon. Right? "The demigods drank nectar every day, but still they feared this great demon and awaited his death." You know, so it's kind of like, take a sip. Still there. Okay. Yes. I'll take a double. Agasura went to Vrindavan. I'll take a triple. Yes. This, what do you call it? Amrita. Neat. This demon could not tolerate the transcendental pleasure being enjoyed in the forest by the cowherd boys, right? He can't tolerate that. What is a demon? Their only purpose is to be happy themselves. So if anybody else is happy, they can't tolerate that. So here we have, he can't tolerate that the boys are having fun, right? You know, that's got to be a demon, right? Srila Prabhupada comments, "One may ask how Krishna's pastimes could be interrupted by a demon. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur answers this question by saying that although the transcendental pleasure being enjoyed by the cowherd boys could not be stopped, unless they stopped the transcendental pleasure of their various activities, they could not eat their lunch. Therefore, at lunchtime, Agasura appeared by the arrangement of Yoga Maya, so that for the time being, they could stop their activities and take lunch." Because otherwise, they'd just keep playing and they couldn't take lunch. You know, so then they have to stop. So then she arranged it that he can't stop them because they're transcendental. They're beyond. He's a materialist. So, but they would have to be stopped, their playing, to be able to notice him and to take part in that pastime. So therefore Yoga Maya arranged it so he came at noon so that's the normal time they would stop. Changing varieties are the mother of enjoyment. Right, so they'll be playing, then they'll stop, they'll take lunch, then they'll play again, they'll play different games, you know, all these different things. So that's the whole idea, is the variety is there that brings about Krishna's enjoyment. That's there. So the devotee is trying in various ways how to do. So that's why you see in the Vedic, sometimes it's harder to appreciate how things work because it's designed to have unlimited variety. Right? While in modern, you don't get that so much. You have certain things that you do, that's it, and that's as far as it gets. But in the Vedic, it's all about unlimited variety. So that means, how do you get unlimited variety if you don't understand the principles on which it runs? And since it's principle-based like that, and the non-Vedic is all detail-based, therefore, that's why the Vedic culture can't be understood by those of the modern culture, because they have no reference to go from. There's no concept of that. Does that make sense? Yes, yeah, so therefore they're creating this unlimited variety, so that's what Yoga Maya is doing. She creates a variety of situations and everything so that they can therefore then have the variety. "The cowherd boys would continuously play, then stop, and then again enjoy in a different way. Therefore, every day a demon would come and interrupt their sporting activities, pastimes. The demon would be killed, and then the boys would engage again in their transcendental pastimes." So it didn't in any way stop their pastimes, it just created variety. So they'd be playing one set of games. When the demon would come, then all that would stop. And then after Krishna kills the demon, then they would go back to playing again, but now they'd do something different. So the demon was actually helping create the variety in the pastimes. Not necessarily that they got the devotional credit for that. Yoga Maya does, but because she arranges when they'll come. So in other words, the play has gotten to a particular peak. Now it's ready to change into another flavor. That's when the demon will come. She won't bring it in right in the middle. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Agasura, who had been sent by Kamsa, was the younger brother of Putana and Bakasura. Therefore, when he came and saw Krishna at the head of all the cowherd boys, he thought, this Krishna has killed my sister and brother, Putana and Bakasura. Therefore, in order to please them both, I shall kill this Krishna along with his assistants and other cowherd boys. Okay, where was that? Remember that place that mentioned about Sahotra?
It's in the previous chapter.
Previous chapter? No wonder I can never find anything. I think it's just the page or two before. Ah, okay. Is okay, along with the brothers who became Palumba and Keshi. Okay, so no, that this is oh, this was Bakasura. Okay, this is a different group of relatives. Okay, yeah, that's what I was thinking. Did they overlap or not? No, okay, so Sahotra, Palumba Keshi, and Baka. So they were three brothers. Now then, this is another group. So this is Agasura, Putana, and Bakasura. Okay, in this life they are. In the previous life, then those other two were, but they're not necessarily related here. Okay. Ooh, it gets even more complicated, right? It means Bakasura, Putana, and Agasura are related in this life. But Bakasura was Suhotra, who then was related in his previous life to who became Keshi and Palumba. Though in this life, I'm not sure if they're related. But, yeah, friends. Okay. Compatriots. Okay. Yes. Okay. Footnote 12. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verses 12 to 14 and 16 to Bhagavad Akramichi Mala, chapter 19, entitled Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, the Unlimited Dimensions of Rasa, Siddha Prema Rasa, Rasa Garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. All right, so he's come to set up this kind of, this was, what would you say was? 12, 14, and 16. So 12, the yogis undergo, but they can't see, but the residents of Vrindavan can see him face to face. Okay, not about the demon. Then about the boys, you know, about, okay. Yes. Agasura thought, if somehow or other I can make Krishna and his associates serve as the last offering of sesame and water for the departed souls of my brother and sister, then the inhabitants of Brajabhumi, for whom these boys are the life and soul, will automatically die. There is no life, there is no need for the body. Consequently, when their sons are dead, naturally all the inhabitants of Braja will die. After thus deciding, that crooked Agasura assumed the form of a huge python, as thick as a big mountain, and as long as 8 miles. Having assumed this wonderful python's body, he spread his mouth like a big cave in the mountains, and lay down on the road, expecting to swallow Krishna's associates, the cowherd boys. His lower lip rested on the surface of the earth, and his upper lip was touching the clouds in the sky. The borders of his mouth resembled the sides of a big cave in a mountain, and the middle of his mouth was as dark as possible. His tongue resembled a broad traffic way. His breath was like a warm wind, and his eyes blazed like fire. Upon seeing this demon's wonderful form, which resembled a great python, the boys thought that it must be a beautiful scenic spot of Vrindavan. Thereafter, they imagined it to be similar to the mouth of a great python. In other words, the boys, unafraid, thought that it was a statue made in the shape of a great python for the enjoyment of the pastimes. Right? So when they thought it was a beautiful scenery, they thought it was just the scenery looked like a big python. They didn't actually think it was a big python. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, some of the boys, on seeing Agasura, started to run away, thinking it was a big snake. Other boys, however, considered that Agasura was one of the wonders of Vrindavan. They comforted their fearful friends by saying, "O fools, a snake can never be this big. It is something created by the Lord out of clay, so that we can appreciate the splendor of Vrindavan even more. He has made it in the form of a huge snake with a big gaping snout." In this way, they thought of the Lord's creation as something like a gaping mouth of the serpent. Ut prekshante, without fear, lilaya. In Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur writes, "Agasura represents the mentality of cruelty to others and violence and causing trouble to others out of envy. This attitude is an offense against the chanting of the holy names. It may also manifest in the form of an unwillingness to help other living beings by giving them Krishna consciousness." Right, so either we harass those who are already, you know, other living entities, like that, out of envy. And if it's aimed at the devotees, then that'll be the first offense. Or an unwillingness to preach and give others Krishna consciousness. Right? It means we have opportunities, then we take that up, and if we don't, then that's another thing.
Can we say that there is a progression in the demons, how they come? They become worse, what they represent, or not necessarily?
I would say as they're getting more, there would have to be some element of progression, because once you're free from one thing, then the next one comes, you're free from that. So it must be getting deeper and deeper. So it means that you just keep going until it resonates. Then you know, okay, that's where we are. And if they all resonate, then okay, then keep reading the pastimes. It's just by hearing about them. You hear about them with faith, then these Krishna removes these things. How fast?
Tabi-habi.
Soon. Like that. So it's not a long time. You know, it's like the acharyas say, you know, today or tomorrow when we'll develop one's Krishna consciousness. You know, so if it's not today, then we'll see tomorrow. Because if you're dealing in this transcendental time, then it's not a long time. Yeah.
Now the killing of demons is happening in the forest. Earlier it was in the Gokul, near the home.
Oh, okay. Does that have a different...
No, because that is the only difference.
Oh, okay. It's just where it's happening. Okay. According to the Garga Samhita, in his previous life, he was Agha, a son of Shankasura. He had a very attractive body, of which he was very proud. One time he saw the Muni Astavakra, whose body is disfigured, and he laughed and said, "Who is this ugly person?" The sage cursed him to become the ugliest snake on earth. Agha then fell at his feet and begged for mercy, so the sage blessed him that he would be delivered by Lord Krishna. He didn't change the ugliest snake part, though. Right, so this mentality of cruelty, you know, mentally cruel. So then he just laughs. You know, it's just like Astavakra can't do anything about what his body's like, but they laugh anyway. Because he's so good looking, so just being proud.
That's similar to Navadvipa and Deva, I guess, in the sense they were not offensive.
But yeah, but they didn't have this aspect. You know, but they had that pride of... That would be from wealth and this and that. It means he had it from beauty. And that, but there's wealth. So even if you're beautiful, if you're not so wealthy, then they may not be so proud, right? But here, he must have been so either so good looking or just so proud of it. You know, you have people like that.
Hmm?
Both. Because it says son Agha, son of Shankasura. So it must have been, you know, his father was powerful, like that. The boy said, "Dear friends, is this creature dead, or is it actually a living python with its mouth spread wide just to swallow us all? Kindly clear up this doubt." Thereafter they decided, "Dear friends, it is certainly an animal sitting here to swallow us all. Its upper lip resembles a cloud, reddened by the sunshine, and its lower lip resembles the reddish shadows of a cloud. On the left and right, the two depressions resembling mountain caves are the corners of its mouth, and the high mountain peaks are its teeth. In length and breadth, the animal's tongue resembles a broad traffic way, and the inside of its mouth is very, very dark, like a cave in a mountain. The hot firing wind is the breath coming out of his mouth, which is giving off the bad smell of burning flesh because of all the dead bodies he has eaten. Then the boy said, "Has this living creature come to swallow us? If he does so, he will immediately be killed like Bakasura without delay." Thus they looked at the beautiful face of Krishna, the enemy of Bakasura. And, laughing loudly and clapping their hands, they entered the mouth of the python. Right? So in other words, for them it's fun. Krishna kills the demon. So they're thinking that it's something like this. So whether they're saying it's if it's real or not, you know, because they're small. So small kids move in and out of real and play and pretend very easily. So now whether they're actually thinking it's a snake or whether they, as before, thought it was just part of the scenery, but they're taking that mood, if it is real and it is that and come to swallow us, then Krishna will save us. And you know, so it doesn't really matter whether they, how they understood, just that surrender to Krishna, that's then how they'll see it. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes, "Together they spoke with a little fear. This thing, if this is really a snake and we enter its mouth, will he swallow us up?" Someone then answered to calm them down, "If it is so, then in an instant he will be killed by Bakasura, was killed by Krishna." Saying this, he smiled while looking at Krishna, who was standing some distance away. "Krishna is within our glass, so what have we to worry?" Getting this answer, they all began to laugh loudly and said, "Friends, we must find out what is in that mouth." Right? So whether it is just, you know, a scenery aspect, so what's the cave and all that, or if it is a snake, then, you know, so what's happening here? Because Krishna's there, so they're so dependent on Krishna that they're not worried. Then they entered the mouth out of boyish curiosity. They ran in, clapping their hands, to show their fearlessness and courage, or to dismiss the snake. The calves also, raising their tails, ran after them inside the snake's mouth. Because right, when the cows raise their tails, generally means that they're more frisky and they run more quickly. Because otherwise, even if they're just going along a little quickly, they don't raise their tail. When they raise their tail, you see, they jump, they hop, they more fun. Sukadev Goswami continued, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who is situated as Antaryami, the Supersoul, in the core of everyone's heart, heard the boys talking among themselves about the artificial python. Unknown to them, it was actually Agasura, a demon who had appeared as a python." Right? So they're just talking in pretend. Right? So they think it is just scenery. But, you know, as pretend, you make it real and make it more dangerous and mayor this, but Krishna's here and he'll kill him, like that. It's all in that affection. So they're tasting rasa there, even though it's you know, coming up with pretend situation scenarios that, you know, the kids will do. Right? Does that make sense? Krishna, knowing this, wanted to forbid his associates to enter the demon's mouth, because he knew it was a demon. They didn't. In the meantime, while Krishna was considering how to stop them, all the cowherd boys entered the mouth of the demon. Footnote 13. To think that though Krishna wanted to stop the boys from entering, he could not do it, and that his satya-sankalpa shakti, every desire of the Lord is fulfilled, was thwarted, is incorrect. The devotees had the desire. If we go in the serpent's mouth, will he swallow us? If he swallows us, our friend will kill him as he did Baka. Of the two desires, the desire of the devotee prevails, as it was explained previously, by the principle that the Lord is controlled by the devotee. This is all arranged by the ever-watchful Leela Shakti of the Lord, which destroys all contradictions. Sardartha Darshini 10.12, 26. Right, so, it's not that he couldn't stop them. He was thinking how to stop them, since they had the desire, and their desire is stronger than his, because he wants to please them. He's controlled by their desire, by their affection. So he didn't have a way to do it at that point, because that was what they wanted to do. Because that was their play. That means, in their mind, they're just going into a mountain cave and pretending it's a snake. And even if nothing happens, then it's just a mountain cave. They might shout, Krishna, Krishna, come save us from the demon, you know, whatever it is. And then he'll come and they'll have some, you know, pastime in this, and then they'll all go out and have the lunch. Right? Yeah. The demon, however, did not swallow them, for he was thinking of his own relatives who had been killed by Krishna, and was just waiting for Krishna to enter his mouth. Krishna saw that all the cowherd boys, who did not know anyone but him as their lord, had now gone out of his hand and were helpless, having entered like straws into the fire of the abdomen of Agasura, who was death personified. It was intolerable for Krishna to be separated from his friends, the cowherd boys. Therefore, as if seeing that this had been arranged by his internal potency, Krishna was momentarily struck with wonder and unsure of what to do. Right, so it's just amazing how Leela Shakti arranged all this. He had his desire, the cowherd boys had theirs, and the whole thing, and how this is going to unfold. So he's just amazed how nicely his Leela Shakti has arranged this situation. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Krishna was astonished at the actions of his Leela Shakti, or of time in having them enter the serpent's mouth. Right, so Leela Shakti or time, because time then arranges things, how things, you know, progress. What was the cause of astonishment? Krishna considers, it is not possible for these coward boys to have prarabdha karma, and besides, the super soul does not give them the tendency for karma, right? Because he is living in their hearts, then they're not going to have that nature. Because super soul is my expansion, she does not do anything unfavorable to me. Therefore, the Leela Shakti has made this seemingly unfavorable arrangement with a desire to put me, full of prema, into the compassionate mood on seeing this unfortunate situation. How astonishing is her control over me, the form of all rasas, the king of all Leela. Though the sorrow due to separation from his friends remained, with a rise of astonishment, it reduced a little. This is the meaning, right? Because the astonishment would be coming up as a temporary thing, something else, while the separation is more, because the friendship relationship there, that will be the main rasa that's being experienced. And then these will be all these other subsequent bhavas that will come after that. Something like that. Yeah. So that's why there'll be the one that concerned, then there'll be, you know, the astonishment, can turn to other things. It can have all those different kind of aspects. Srila Jiva Goswami writes in his Priti Sandarbha, Anucheda 143, when, in his human-like form, the Supreme Personality of Godhead enjoys loving pastimes with his devotees, it is sometimes seen that he becomes bewildered, that he is no longer all-knowing. That bewilderment is a virtue on his part. That bewilderment makes his pastimes more sweet. Therefore, because that bewilderment brings to the wise devotees the bliss of spiritual love, that bewilderment is not a fault. Right? Because that bewilderment then brings about the increase in the affection and exchange between the Lord and the devotees. And so it's not a fault. Well, in the material platform, bewilderment then means one doesn't know what one should do. So therefore, then the relationship has stopped. But for Krishna, this aspect of bewilderment, it only increases the relationship, increases the rasa. So in the spiritual world, these what seemingly are faults in the material world aren't faults in the spiritual world. Yes?
So can we say that all the sanctuary bhavas are always in support of the sthayi bhava?
Yes.
It doesn't happen independently.
No, because see, as we saw that was mentioning before, the different activities that they will do.
Yeah.
So that means that with a particular sthayi bhava, And any, like it showed, he even showed subdivisions of that Stai Bhava.
Yeah.
Then there will be certain, that means the Ashraya has a particular flavor, therefore the Udipans will be specific. Mm-hmm. Then that will give rise to specific Anubhavas, specific Sattvika Bhavas, and specific Vyabhichari Bhavas. Like that. So there's 33 total of the Vyabhichari. But it's not that every rasa or every aspect of the rasa tastes all 33. So depending on the rasa, then, you know, they'll have certain set. Not that they're not overlapping, but it's just that it matches the flavor that's there. Does that make sense? Yeah, so they'll always be in support, everything. Because when Stai Bhav gets mixed with Vibhav, that's where rasa is tasted. Mm-hmm. Then the effect of that is Anubhav, Sattvika Bhav, Vyabhichari Bhav. Like that. These are effects and then tastes that are there. But the cause of rasa is the combination between the Stai Bhav and the Vibhav. Like that. Is that... That's good. How you say? We were going through, there was there in the Jiva Dharma and other things, and then it's like, what is this? And now after 5 years, now, okay, yeah, now it makes sense. I think it is indeed.
Indeed, the Lord voluntarily accepts.
Yeah, indeed, the Lord voluntarily accepts that bewilderment for that purpose. So that's the point. He voluntarily puts himself under the control of his devotees. Right? So the Leela Shakti is one of his devotees. So out of devotion, then she makes so many nice arrangements. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, any material arrangement for protecting oneself from death is always unsure. But if one is in Krishna consciousness, then immortality is confidentially assured. Right? So immortality means us in the consciousness as devotees of Krishna, that will continue on. So it's just now about becoming more mature and specific, understanding one's position within the Lord's pastimes and the relationships that are there, and then learning how to function in that. Krishna considered, now what was to be done? How could both the killing of this demon and the saving of the devotees be performed simultaneously? Krishna, being unlimitedly potent, decided to wait for an intelligent means by which he could simultaneously save the boys and kill the demon. Then he entered the mouth of Agasura. Srila Prabhupada comments, Krishna is known as Ananta Virya Sarva Gya, because everything is known to him, because he knows everything perfectly well. It was not difficult for him to find a means by which he could save the boys and at the same time kill the demon. Right, so here we see is that difference here. Virya means is that practical means. You have that enthusiasm. It's a strength of the enthusiasm to find the means. Right, so that'll be virya, as opposed to bala, which is strength, or tejas. You know what I'm saying? Because those are all three, those has that masculine aspect. But, there'll be a difference. So bala just means the position, the strength, you know, that's there, the capacity. The virya means then that cleverness to be able to see how to use it, that inspiration to use it. Right? And then the tejas is that the actual application of it so that you get a result. Does that make sense? So it's the three different features. No? We know what I'm talking about? Yeah, okay.
Tejas I couldn't understand.
Tejas you couldn't understand. Means?
Like, what is tejas?
Tejas.
Tejas, the third thing. Bala, virya, tejas.
What don't you understand?
Virya is how to apply it.
It's the inspiration to apply it. Means bala means you have the strength, you have that knowledge, you have that understand that identity that is there. Virya, you have that inspiration, and then tejas is the how you say. means it's been applied that it gives results. That I can do it and I get the result, that's tejas. Right.
So would that be Sangasyan Pradyumna and
Aniruddha. Huh? Aniruddha. Vasudeva is all three of them together.
So
So those three, those are the masculine aspects of the six. Right?
What about the feminine aspects of the same Kalyana Buddha?
Then you have jnana, Aishwarya, and Shakti.
Are they also represented more or less the same?
There'll be the feminine aspect connected with that. So I have the bala, but you have to have the knowledge how to use that, how to apply that. But it's the knowledge that's static, right? So then, virya, then you have Aishwarya, which is the opulence. Means by being inspired to apply it, means you have facilities, you're confident of that, you have that kind of aspect. Right? It means generally you don't have virya if there's no opulence. Right? You know, when you have knowledge, then you feel you have strength. Because you see guys that have strength with no knowledge, and they're generally not considered that great. You know, they're the guys out there with the, you know, haymakers that always fall over when you sneeze or something like that. And Shakti, then you have the aspect of, you know, how you say, the results of all these different endeavors. You know, what you can gain, what you can do. So on the material platform, one's trying to enjoy that. So in other words, the tejas is how to enjoy the Shakti. You understand? But on the spiritual platform, then you've gotten the results, you know, for Krishna's enjoyment. So that's the difference. Like on the material platform, I think I have material knowledge. I think I'm very strong. But the actual position is that I have knowledge about Krishna and I'm fixed in my identity as servant of Krishna. That's strong. Mm-hmm. Right? Then Virya and Aishwarya, then you have that, you're inspired to do things for Krishna. You come up ways, you can figure out how to get things done for Krishna. But the inspiration part, you know, that, not the practical application, because Vasudeva means you're going to practically apply it. That's where that will come into place, in the Abhideya. But that means you have the inspiration because you see what facilities are there. So in the material sense, you'll think, these are my opulences, therefore I am so clever, I'm getting things done. Right? But on but in this platform, opulences are all Krishna's. And so then, because you have no attachment, and you identify as Krishna's servant, right? Means you have no attachment, means there's no problems in Aniruddha. And you see yourself as Krishna's servant, you know, coming from Sankarsana. Then Pradyumna becomes rightly situated, and that you use your intelligence to cleverly figure out and be inspired how to use everything in Krishna's service. Right? Some sense. And having applied it, then getting the results, it's not for you to enjoy, it's for Krishna to enjoy. Mm-hmm. Just, hey, we got cheated. Okay. Oh, it must be a different line. No, it shouldn't be. Oh, maybe the road's on its own line. Okay. Does that make sense? It's starting to become more clear.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe by the sun, later we will also remember them.
Yeah. Then at one point, yeah. Okay. Right, because here you see the key, Ananta Virya Sarva Gya, right? Because everything is known to him, because he knows everything perfectly well, right? It was not difficult for him to find a means by which he could save the boys, and at the same time kill the demons. So that's the Virya. You can take all these contradictory things and make them all work, because you have so much knowledge in different areas, how to combine them all together and come up with something. Right? So that's the cleverness. You know what I'm saying?
But the pages is also
That's there, but at this point, but that's going to be, you're going to apply and get a result.
So it's the next step, which is...
Yes, because that's Aniruddha. Right? So you know where you're getting it, but then you have to apply it. So having thought all this, now he also decided to enter the demon's mouth. Now he'll now apply himself. Right? Sukadev Goswami continued, when Krishna entered the mouth of Agasura, the demigods hidden behind the clouds exclaimed, alas, alas, notice that they're hidden behind the clouds. Right, depending on the pastime, they'll hide themselves. So, you know, here's the demon, you hide. Right, But the friends of Agasura, like Kamsa and other demons, were jubilant. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, though the devatas were aware of the Lord's powers, because they are also devotees, they shouted in anxiety. Right? So they're devotees of the Lord, so if anything looks like it's going to be unfavorable to the Lord, then they'll get an anxiety. But they know his power, but still they don't want him to go through any difficulty. The very nature of bhakti is to have affection, and the very nature of affection is to lose one's logical discriminatory powers. Right? So that's why in the Vedic, you want to maintain the discriminatory powers while you work within the culture. Right? Because the idea is not to develop love within the material world, but love within the spiritual world. Right? So therefore, then, since we're engaging our activities in Krishna's service, right, to have that love for him, but not have the love for the things of this world, then how are we going to deal with the things of this world that they're favorable as a result for Krishna? Right? Other than the performance of duties. So unless we know what the duties are and then we perform those duties, and we do that with the intention to please Krishna, that will then give results in this world, free us from the entanglement of those results, situating us on the spiritual platform, and develop our love for Krishna. So all that's happening at once. So it looks like what they're doing in the spiritual world, because in the spiritual world, their love for the other living entities is all in connection to Krishna. So when we see family and friends and that in connection with Krishna, then it has it's what they're doing in the spiritual world. Right? We think it's something else, that the love itself, that has its own life, and then seeing them other, that's kind of like, okay, we can do that, or it's part of the process, it's more of a intellectual kind of things. But no, that's actually the position. And seeing others as the body, and therefore having that affection based on that, that's actually the point that's not real. So that's the mode of ignorance, switches. Does that make sense? So is that we see why that's the method being given. It's what they do in the spiritual world. Yes?
So their rasa is flowing like a river. But we use the power of discrimination here. We can actually give up. Is that correct?
Yes. Means when we're dealing with the secondary aspects, we always use the discrimination. But when you're dealing with the primary, then we're using the discrimination. That's why it's called sadhana bhakti. Because we're having to discriminate between doing it for Krishna or doing it for ourselves. But as it goes, then it becomes more and more about Krishna, and so that discriminatory power becomes less and less important. So when that discriminatory power becomes so lessened because of one's devotion to Krishna, it's at that time that, therefore, the activities of this world, though they may be duties to perform, may not be so interesting to be involved in anymore. Does that make sense? So that's how then one moves into vanaprastha, sannyas, antiparamahamsa, like that.
I'm just trying to understand, because discrimination is a main function of the intelligence.
Yes.
So
the point is when there's so much affection, does the intelligence work well?
Not really.
No, so that's what we're saying. But we're used to that happening because of material affection. So, therefore, we're controlling the mind by the intelligence so that we actually use that discrimination. That's what keeps us off being bewildered by material affection. And that's why, therefore, we need duties. Because, let us say, if I'm attached to karma, okay, and that's why I'm doing something. Now, if I see that's not something I'm supposed to be attached to, or this is actually ultimately useless, what would be the natural reaction of what we might do then?
Just
give it up. But that's not actually a position, because the point is you have to express your devotion through something, so you can't just give it up. Because you can say, well, we could give it up and just, you know, go to the forest, but as Krishna pointed out to Arjuna, you go to the forest and you'll still go on acting like a Kshatriya. You won't act like a Brahmin. Like that, the nature will be there. So unless the nature is purified to the point where one is Paramahamsa, then if you're not so absorbed in that affection for Krishna that you're not even aware of the external, then it doesn't matter. Because Maya will take care of it. It means the external energy will take care of it. You know, it's like children. They're not really aware of getting dressed or eating or this or that, but it happens. Right? So, therefore, the discriminatory power is always used. What I'm saying is that when one has pulled one's affections completely out of the material and they're placed exclusively into Krishna, then there may come a time when, due to the absorption in Krishna, the discriminatory aspects of the intelligence aren't so prominent. So at that point, one might find performance of the material activities that, you know, here when we say material, we don't mean mundane, we just mean the ordinary activities, you know, according to Varnashram. Mm-hmm. We're unable to perform because we're so absorbed in Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. Mm-hmm. Right? Just like you see, the Paramahamsas, they will give up the duties. Mm-hmm. Right? Like that. So that's what we're saying, it's a natural position to come to. But if it doesn't come here, we don't have to worry about it, because we'll come to that position in the spiritual world, in our training. Right? But if it comes in this place, then it's not something to worry about. So that's why when people take up the externals of the Paramahamsa, like that, then it's a problem. Because they're claiming to be something that they're not. And that's what Maya means, that which is not. They're saying they're Paramahamsas, but they're not. Like the Babaji's in Vrindavan, you want to have fun. During, let's say you're having some kind of an utsav at Radhakund, you know, and then Raghunath Das Goswami's place, and all the Babaji's set up. You have all the senior ones, and then on down like that. You want to see Paramahamsa? Just when it's time to take prasad, go and sit down with the senior men. See what happens. Huh? That's the point. They'll just toss you right out. It'll be a riot. But I thought these guys were Paramahamsas. You know, everybody there is Paramahamsas. Nobody's Paramahamsa. That's the whole point. You know, they've just created their own Vaidhi. You have to do this, you have to do that. Right? You have to wear this particular cloth. You ever heard of marking cloth? Marking? No one? Marking? Wow. Okay. Marking cloth is the cheapest kind of machine-made cloth that you get. You get it in different weights, you know, 28 inches, this, up to huge widths. It's the stuff that they'll use to line curtains with, if you're not using too expensive stuff. They'll use it underneath, like you have a couch underneath the bottom, there's that white cloth there. It's cheap cloth. So the rule is, I don't know if it's now, but it was before, Vrindavan and Mayapur Babaji's, that's the cloth you have to wear. If you're wearing another cloth, then you're just a disgusting, gross Vishayi, right? But you have to wear that cloth. You know, that's why Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, when they were all these bogus, you know, Babajis are harassing and people are coming that are just materialistic and just want blessings. So one day somebody gave him, I think, 2 rupee donation or something. So he went into town and bought, a 2 rupee Shantipuri dhoti, which in that time would be a very expensive, fancy dhoti. Then he put that on and sat down. And then everyone thinks, oh, this guy's a gross materialist. So no one bothered him. So he could just sit there and chant and everything was fine. You know? like that. So whenever he went into town, he put on that dhoti and go in and that, and they just think, okay, leave this guy alone. So they wouldn't bother him. Then he could go back. Then he could sit there in his kopas, right? You know, but he'd already set the mood, right? Yeah, so like that. It's just they get all these external. So that's the whole thing, is that's why we, you know, at Vaishnavas in general, the Gaudiyas, then we just follow what's the tradition, what's the standard positions of the Varnashram system. And so then using the intelligence, we discriminate in there, because the Madhyama uses the discrimination. When one gets to the point one can't function as a Madhyama, then that may be there, but generally it's recommended that one does, because you can benefit others. Does that make sense? Like that. Oh, okay. Where do we go? Okay. Kamsa and the Rakshasas, Kaunapa, eaters of corpses, the sons and brothers of Agasura, rejoiced on hearing the news from messengers. Right, so when they heard the enter, then they were all happy. Okay, so enter. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nityai Gaura.